I'm Mr. 305 Pitbull. That's Rowdy Roddy Piper. And we're here to talk Denver Nuggets and playoffs. All right, I'm Tom Haberstroh. Welcome to The Big Number. You're watching our new podcast feed. We were, doing The Big Number last year as a 2 to 3 minute video, and now it's an entire podcast with my co-host Dan Devine. Drops every Thursday right here at Yahoo Sports, and it's Halloween! Happy Halloween, everybody. I am Mr. 305, Mr. Worldwide Pitbull today, and I'm joined, not by Dan anymore. Who am I joined by today?
Well, I was going to wear my Rowdy Roddy Piper outfit anyway. Like, that's just my normal Thursday getup, but I figured since it was Halloween, I might as well go for that. I am realizing that I was sold a bill of goods on this wig. If you are not watching this on YouTube, you are missing out on some real impressive wig work, some real impressive, look-alike business from Tom Haberstroh. But the main thing that I want everybody to know is that here on The Big Number, Tom Haberstroh, he brings the information, but just when he thinks he knows all the answers, I change the questions. And that's what's going to happen today here on this Halloween episode of The Big Number.
I got questions like, is that actually a wig or is that your hair?
It's a tough hang, this wig. I'd be really good in a wrestling match because someone could just yank it off me and it would go right off and I would be able to clock them. But we're persevering. We're hammering through. I also like, this is the most prominent my pecs have looked in quite some time. And the other big number today, you can't see it quite in this box, is it's 8. That's how many abdominal muscles I have today, which is a nice upgrade for me. That's a big improvement in the big number for me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know what? I got another big number that not related to the actual big number we're going to talk about today, which is 10. The Halloween theme that I'm going for today is Pitbull, because 10, we are at the 10th anniversary of the Pitbull NBA playoffs promo. I feel really old right now. Dan, we've been doing this for a while, and I did not think that was 10 years ago. But Pitbull 2014, LeBron with the Heat, OKC with Russ and KD. I think maybe there's Paul George, Chris Paul with the Clippers, and it was Timber. It was Kesha, and it was fire. And so coming up on the 10th anniversary, I wanted to pay tribute to Mr. 305, to playoffs. And that's why I did it today. And that's why another number, 0. I have 0 chest hair follicles left.
I decided
to shave my chest in honor of Pitbull. And so my wife is thrown off right now, very much so. And I got a little goatee, a little soul patch right here. Is the guy from Stain, the guitarist? Is that the guy I'm thinking of that has like the most famous soul patch? Did he have a soul patch, or am I just imagining this?
I'm going to go ahead and say there's only one guy from Stained whose name I know, and it was the singer Aaron Lewis. And so if it's not that guy, I don't know. And also, not for nothing, the fact that I was able to pull Aaron Lewis out of nowhere
Amazing.
Is kind of impressive to me, if to nobody else. I think the important thing to remember is that soul patches are from a year gone by, an era that has passed us. And maybe today's big number is about whether or not somebody has been passed by.
That's right. That's right. And we're going to get into it here. As you know, if you watched last week, we're going to give you the most important stat of the week in the NBA. This is an analytical number or something that explains a larger trend in the NBA or something that we're going to debate here, whether it's true or whether it's just a bunch of smoke. And speaking of smoke, because a lot of smoked layups so far this season by this one player, this week's big number is 87.5. It's actually a small number because that is the Denver Nuggets points per 100 possessions, also known as their offensive rating, with a one Russell Westbrook on the floor. And the reason why I'm referencing that is because that is the lowest team offensive rating for any player on court for any team with a minimum of 75 minutes played. So Russell Westbrook in his age 36 season, it's been a disaster so far in 79 minutes and 87.5 offensive rating. That's lower than Cody Williams, the rookie from Utah. Julian Strother, his teammate, is, burping up 93.4 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. And John Collins in Utah, a lot of Utah and Denver happening here. And Victor Wembanyama, this is kind of sad. Maybe we should table this for another time. Victor Wembanyama, when he's on the floor, the San Antonio Spurs are coughing up just 95.7 points every 100 possessions, and he's number five on the list. But number one is Russell Westbrook's on court, 87.5. He actually had a really good game, Dan. In his last time out, 22 efficient points on about 17 true shots. He was good from long range. He was attacking the rim. He got to the free throw line 10 times and he hit all 10 free throws while talking a lot of smack. I think it was Nick Claxton. And so that's good. But the fact that the best case scenario is that they need overtime to get past Brooklyn, it's really sad. So the Denver Nuggets are 2-2. The offensive rating with Russell Westbrook on the floor is 87.5. So here's my big verdict, my big conclusion. After watching, what, four games of the Denver Nuggets, I'm ready. I'm ready to declare they're going to miss the playoffs. Like Pitbull in that little promo, playoffs, I say no. I say it's timber. I say they're not going to get to the top six, which is what they need to avoid the play-in. They might make the play-in, but I'm saying top six in the Western Conference by the end of the season because of that second unit anchored by Russell Westbrook has been a disaster, and I think it's going to be tough to pull themselves out of it. I say the Denver Nuggets are going to miss the playoffs top six in the Western Conference. Dan, what say you? Dale.
Well, so to be clear, just make sure our listeners understand it. It's not that they won't make the postseason period. It's that they will not get to the top six. They will have to slug it out through the play-in to get to the postseason proper.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to say the nay-no on this one, my brother. I'm disagreeing with you. I'm still having the Nuggets go into the top six. I'm saying the big number is not BS. I don't know how, I'm not sure exactly how much I'm supposed to curse on this one. Roddy Piper didn't curse on a lot of his promos, but in some of them he did. I would say the number itself is not totally bogus, but I still think the Nuggets are going to be able to eke their way into the top six. Now, maybe not home court advantage, maybe not a mid-50s win total like we've seen from them in years past, but I think a couple of things are still going in their favor. Number one, they still have a gigantic Serbian guy who's exceptionally good at basketball. Nikola Jokic has carried them even to 2-2, but as long as he's there and soaking up a ton of minutes, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on, I still think they're going to be able to generate enough efficient offense and keep themselves above water enough to where they're going to be able to fight their way through the top six. The other thing I want to say, and then I want us to be able to sort of go back and forth on this a little bit, is the Nuggets don't necessarily need the Russell Westbrook minutes to like be, you know, it's going down, Kesha fireworks, etc. They just kind of need it to be all right. And that's a good thing because heading into this season, the number one question that we had about the Nuggets, not so much about the Russ component of it, was can the starting lineup still be awesome once you moved off Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and bring in Christian Brown? So far, so good. Plus 25 in 104 minutes with the new starting lineup. Almost plus 12 per 100 possessions. Monster offensive rating. So they're still dominating in the biggest chunk of their minutes. You mix dominate there with stay afloat in the bench minutes, and you're still going to be good to go. And I am more optimistic than you that the Nuggets will get to staying afloat. And we could talk about that as we go on.
We're going to get some more thoughts on this. I've got a lot of numbers here that are really scary, Halloween scary. And we're going to get to that here right after the break. All right, we're back here on the big number, the one stat you need to know to understand the NBA and the entire landscape. We're going to blow your mind here with a couple stats and I don't know, some takes here. I really do think, Dan, you're right. Jokic is still on the team. It's hard to bet against the Serbian who's won the MVP, what, three out of the last 4 years. He's a guy who's now taking a ton of three-pointers to make sure they get enough shooting onto the floor, and he's hitting him at a high rate. But I also think the big reason why I'm skeptical about where this season is going or where it's headed is I kind of feel like we're almost best-case scenario there. I feel like Mike Malone, he's kind of in the same Van Gundy, Tom Thibodeau tree. They shared a bench in New York way back when, and as an assistant coach for the New York Knicks. And he's doing his best Tom Thibodeau act when it comes to the starters. You mentioned how good the starting lineup is, and he is leaning on them so hard. I don't understand how this is going to go long term. I'm really worried that they're just relying on the starters. And Mike Malone has had a very interesting preseason talking about Calvin Booth, or not exactly calling him out, but pointing out that, hey, that KCP guy, 40% three-point shooting, could really use him on this team, insinuating that he misses that dude. And Christian Brown, when you look at him, he's doing fine, but the depth on this team is such that the starting lineup is playing 26 minutes a game together. You never see this. This is outrageous. 26 minutes with the same five guys on the floor. That's the most in the NBA by far. You think Tom Thibodeau relies on his starters a lot? He's at 18 minutes per game with that five-man lineup. No other team in the NBA, Dan, has their starting lineup on the floor for longer than the Denver Nuggets at 26. No team has more than 18. There's no 19. There's no 20. There's no 21. No 22. No 23. No 24. It is just 26 minutes per game with that starting lineup. He's riding them hard this season. And I do think Mike Malone is a guy that like is almost doing this out of spite. Like, he doesn't want to play the young guys so much that he's just riding these veterans into the ground. And I'm worried about Jokic's minutes this year. And I think this is as good as it's going to get.
Well, first of all, before we get further, you got to start calling him Michael Malone. Otherwise, he's going to put you in a sleeper hold like Rowdy Piper used to do to guys.
Going to point him to Pitbull. I'm going to say that was Mr. 305 saying that. That was not Tom.
Not me.
Havistrat.
Go over there. Yeah. Is it like a la derecho? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, over there. A la izquierda. It's a great point. Some of that, I think, is intentionally trying to amplify the chemistry of that starting lineup. Obviously, the starting lineup has been, the KCP iteration of it was among the most used lineups in the NBA the last couple of seasons. Michael Malone has an established sort of preference for predilection toward really leaning on his starters. Yeah. I think some of it is early going. We need to get as much chemistry as possible as we can with that group. But to the detriment, as you note, of not a lack of chemistry developing in the second unit, which beyond the Russell Westbrook component, obviously he is a very idiosyncratic and specific player. He's also somebody joining an organization for the first time, as is Dario Saric. They brought him in to be the backup five. He had played elsewhere the last several years. So he's learning a new coaching staff, new teammates, new roster, new playbook, et cetera. The other main components of the second unit are Julian Strother, a 22-year-old sophomore who played like 550 minutes in his rookie year, and Peyton Watson, who actually, even though he's been around for a couple of years, is younger than Strother. He just turned 22, and he missed the entire preseason with a hamstring injury. So the second unit that Russell Westbrook is being tasked with leading right now has barely played any basketball together. And so I think that's one argument for it will get better than this. They will at no point know less about how to play basketball together than they do right now, I mean, some of the starters that get folded in, right? Jamal Murray, him being a staggered component of second unit lineups has been a feature of Nuggets lineups for years, several years in the past. And he said after they lost to the Clippers, according to Bennett Durando of the Denver Post, a lot of it, meaning the slow start, is coming from chemistry. Like, I remember I was running the break today and I didn't know if I should go to the two or the three. Like, he literally doesn't know where to go stand on the floor right now because he's getting used to new guys being in new places. I think over time that will improve and that will develop. And even within the space of this four-game sample, obviously we're slicing it super duper thin at this point, but the bulk of Russ's terrible numbers are the first two games. And then obviously, that's also the two teams that they played against, like half-decent competition that they would expect to see in the Western Conference playoff picture. But then a little bit better in Toronto, much better in Brooklyn. And I think the offensive rating in those last two games with Russ on the floor is a little under 105, which still sucks. It is still very bad. Yeah. Like, that would be a bottom three or bottom four offense in the league. But again, like, you're above water in those lineups. There was, I think, like plus two per 100 or something like that. If you're above water and you're dominating in the starting lineups, you're going to be all right. And then maybe if that sort of finds a stabilized level, maybe Malone can ease off the gas a little bit. But you're absolutely right. There's still a lot to figure out in those second units. And Russ has been the, as he always has been, sort of the loudest component of that problem.
You know what else is loud? His age. It's 36. He's coming up on 36, right?
Yeah.
He's
2 weeks from now, I
think.
Early happy birthday, Russ. We're giving you a present of us talking about how much you've been garbage early in the season. Sorry.
Well, I do think that it's a disservice from the front office that he's basically playing with either kids or what's looking like a washed up Dario Saric, who has been really rough. Dan, where's Zeke Nagy? This guy got a 4-year, $32 million extension. And this Dario Saric that has just been really rough watch in the, he can't make a layup. He's not shooting threes. I don't know what he's bringing in this role under Michael Malone. And I said, Michael Malone, I got you.
You did.
That's my biggest issue here is this seems like this is oil and vinegar. Like this front office and the coaching staff, it seems like Michael Malone is almost sticking it to the front office by not playing Nagy and saying, I'm going to play a veteran because you've left me with Russell Westbrook and some kids and I got no other choice. So Zeke Nagy, who has shown his promise over the years, has been hurt, of course, but he just got a 4-year extension and they've been playing Dario Saric over him and it hasn't been good. And yet Michael Malone is like, no, we're not doing the Nagy experience. So I'm concerned on that level and the fact that like Russell Westbrook is still being relied on for big minutes here in the second unit. He had a good fourth game, but here are the ages of athletic supernova point guards in NBA history when they last played their last game. This is their age at the end. Isaiah Thomas, of course, with the Achilles injury, 32 years old. He was 32 when he was retired. John Wall, 32. Baron Davis, 33. Derrick Rose, 35. Oscar Robertson, 35. Tiny Archibald, 35. We are at that point with Russell Westbrook. So what he's doing now is exceeding every baseline of an athletic point guard who was, you know, MVP, all-NBA caliber, all-time great point guard. We just have never seen someone perform at a high level or perform, period, with these kind of wheels in their past. So Russell Westbrook, I feel like we might be very critical of him, but I also think in a way it's unfair the kind of position that he's been put in here as the face of that second unit. And unfortunately, he's got no one else to play with. And that's part of the reason why I think the 87.5 points per 100 possessions is actually more indicative of what we're going to see going forward than last year or the year before that. The on-court offensive rating for Russell Westbrook, this is surprising to me. Last year in the Clippers, it was 116. The Clippers were churning out 116 points every 100 possessions with Russell Westbrook on the floor last year as the second unit. And the Clippers were like, we're good. We're good. And I think it's unfair to Russell Westbrook when we make this comparison at 87.5 somewhat because look at who he's playing with compared to last year. He had Paul George. He had James Harden. He had Kawhi Leonard anchoring with him in that second unit. And now he's got Julian Strother and Peyton Watson, who I don't know what his offensive role is, period. And that's put a lot of pressure on Russell Westbrook to create something out of nothing. And I think, Dan, it's almost like I'm sticking up for Russell Westbrook in a way, is that this is really unfair to give this kind of chef kind of D-level grade ingredients to cook with.
I'm sure that Russell Westbrook and all of his fans feel like we're sticking up for him really, really strongly right now. I'm sure they're thrilled with the support we're providing for him. To the point about what he's serving up, 9.5 potential assists per 36 minutes. He's still setting the table for these guys. There just hasn't been a whole lot of making on the other end. Although those guys aren't eating off those feeds. And some of that, I mean, Strother has opened the season shooting well. I think he's something like 11 for 20 from the floor. He's hitting shots. It's the other guys. And, you know, Saric, as you mentioned, that's a real problem because the whole idea is stretch five who can, like, move the ball, connect the sides of the floor, open things up. He's taken 1-3 in like 39 minutes. And that's a guy who's taken 5 or 6 per 36 for his whole career. Like something is disconnected there. And the glass half full, the optimistic take is with some more time and some more reps, some more opportunity, maybe they figure out, you know, here's where he likes it on the floor. Here's his, sort of his best locations. We can get him into some more comfortable rhythm shots. The offense starts to flow a little bit better there. But you're to your point, if you are on like the recipe for Russ at this point has largely been either give him a rim runner and three shooters or a roll man or a stretch five and three shooters. And right now there's just not enough shooting on that second unit, certainly. And then no matter what the mix and match is of staggering the starters. And I think the spotlight for me, the person that winds up squarely in the middle of the headlights there is Michael Porter Jr. Because if you are starting to stagger those lineups and you're saying we want to keep a couple of starters on the floor with Russ, we want to make sure we're getting as much shooting on the floor around him. Jamal Murray, they've put him on, you know, somewhat, and that's Jamal Murray also has not made a ton of shots early, but you feel fairly comfortable in that. That's been a look they've liked. Michael Porter Jr., before he made 4 of 7 against Brooklyn, had, I believe, made 5 of his first 20 threes in the season. 4 of his first 20 threes through 3 games. He's yet to score more than 16 points in a game, and he's posting the lowest usage rate of his career right alongside guys like Kevon Looney and Santi Aldama, who honestly, Santi Aldama might be a better fit on this Nuggets roster than many of the other guys that we might be talking about in that kind of like mid-tier usage. Michael Porter Jr. is making max money. They signed him and they extended him. They anticipated him being a focal point centerpiece kind of player, a guy that could be the bridge to the next competitive iteration, fits perfectly in terms of size and shooting and off-ball movement alongside Jokic. But you need, like, that needs to show up. There needs to be a higher level of, like, both an increased volume of threes and an increased accuracy rate. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to be able to get, like, 2 starters making shots alongside Russ in that second unit or any bench players who can make shots alongside him in the second unit, that, to me, feels like more of the discrepancy in the way that Denver's built. More so, like, you're paying these other guys bigger money to not make shots. And then the blame doesn't necessarily need to all fall on the guy who's making like $3.5 million.
This is the problem, right? You've just hit on it. Is like if Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray are not playing up to their abilities, they're screwed.
Yeah, Denver's dead in the water if that's the case.
Because not only are they, their production is down, but they're locked into this roster. And who's going to take on those contracts if they're performing at this level? And so Jamal Murray at this stage, you have questions about his consistency ever since the playoffs last year. He went into Paris and it was a disaster. He did not perform well with Team Canada. And it was to the point where you started worrying like, wait, is this the Jamal Murray that is going to get a max extension this summer? And I was thinking to myself, I don't know if you give him a max after what we've seen after, you know, the regular season last year, very inconsistent. He had a couple moments, of course, with Kevin Harlan. We remember that shot. And he's won a couple games still. But if you're telling me that Jamal Murray is going to be the answer for this Denver Nuggets team, I haven't seen it in the last few months. Paris, it was bad. Preseason, it was bad. He's been inconsistent this season. And so if you're hitching your wagon to Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. for the next 5 years with Jokic, I've got to be a little bit worried, not only for their team performance, but you can't move off of those contracts. It's the worst of both worlds. You're stuck with them and you can't really flip them for an all-star. Look, my favorite stat with regard to Nikola Jokic is that he's the only MVP in NBA history to have never played with an all-star, an all-NBA player, or an all-defensive player once in his entire career. It's never happened. Jokic is the only MVP in NBA history through 9 seasons to have never played with a star on defense. And I know it's accolades. It's not maybe you can argue Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray were all stars or all defense, or KCP was all defense at some point, but they've never been recognized as such. And we would have to kind of bend over backwards to like say, yeah, Jamal Murray deserved it that 1 year. It's never happened with Jokic. And I don't think they're going to do it. I don't see a path in which they get an all-star caliber player in a trade if you're moving Michael Porter Jr. his contract, if you're moving Jamal Murray. And how are you going to trade Aaron Gordon, who's the only one who seems to fit really well with Jokic right now? And yes, he got an extension here. But I do think that, man, if you're Jokic, he's been playing very nice publicly about not making a lot of noise about the roster and the roster construction. But that fact is still hanging over this team, that Jokic has never had a co-star of the same level that LeBron, that Magic Johnson, that Larry Bird, that Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, all these multiple MVPs in NBA history have had co-stars, have had comparable co-pilots of that kind of accolade. And Jokic has been quiet this entire time. And now he's got this Russell Westbrook who's shooting 27% from the floor, 25% on threes. The assist to turnover ratio, okay. But even the best case scenario, they've needed overtime wins over the Raptors and the Nets. I'm selling. Solid.
I understand why you're selling. And I mean, it is difficult from the vantage point of these four games, which included two like kind of dispiriting losses and two really unconvincing wins, to say like it's all going to work out and come out in the wash. I think the argument from Denver's perspective, and they made this argument financially by the extension that they offered Murray this summer. The argument that they have is, or that they would make, is that Jamal Murray is that guy. He's, yeah, you mentioned Tim Duncan. He's the Tony Parker. That's the argument, is that there's a number two on that level, somebody who, with them on the floor, with those two guys on the floor, they feel confident they can go up against anybody. Murray, despite the downplay to the end of the postseason and in the summer, and looking like a little bit shaky in the beginning of this season, he's like all of a year and a half, not even a year and a half removed, like 15 months removed from being awesome in the finals. He was awesome for most of the last regular season, best regular season of his career. And the like general, like large sample size of more than 500 games together, where they look at it and say, the Nuggets just like they kill people when those two guys are on the floor. 185 and 90 when Jokic and Murray play together before this season, going back to 2019-20, the bubble year.
Yeah.
55 win pace over a 5-year span, plus 11.1 net rating in nearly 6,000 minutes. They're betting on that. They're betting that that will continue to be real. Obviously, past performance does not guarantee future performance. Maybe Jamal Murray isn't that guy anymore. And if that's the case, like they are in the, if that's a lie, we fight on that lie from The Wire. Like that is where they are. They have staked their claim to that as the way this all works, irrespective of whether or not Russ is able to hold things up in the second unit. If the fundamental core argument for why this team should contend is flawed, is proven to be untrue, then it kind of doesn't matter what Russ does. But going back to Russ and going back to the big, today's big number, 87.5 for his offensive rating, I think there's a glass half full, glass half empty way to look at this. And one of them is just like, as you mentioned, Russ has been really, really rough early in the season. His finish, we expect the shooting to be bad. We expect the jump shooting to be bad. It's chapter and verse. Everybody's heard over and over again about, the worst high volume 3-point shooter in NBA history. We are familiar with that. So if he's shooting 25% from three, we're not stunned. It's the other stuff. He's 28% on 2-pointers right now. That really makes your eyes bug out of your head. That is a haunted house of a number for sure. And within that, I think it's the interior finishing has really been the thing to note for me. Russell Westbrook in 79 minutes across four games this season has had his shot blocked 9 times. 9 times at the risk of going back to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. 9 times. 4.1 per 36 minutes. I want to give you back the rates of block shots per 36 for Russ the last 5 seasons. Last year, 1.01. 2022-23, 1.34. Slightly larger, but still small. 21-22, 1.1. 2020-2021, 1.11. 2019-20, 1.42. So across different teams, different roster constructions, there was the Rockets, fully small ball, 5 out. There was alongside AD and LeBron in Los Angeles. There was with the Clippers playing alongside. Across those, about once per game, once per 36 minutes, he was getting his shot blocked. It's happening 4 times a game so far this season, 4 times per 36 minutes. The glass half full side is, that is an outlier that it might be unlikely to continue. The glass half empty side, you brought up the numbers earlier, the age and the minutes. What if we have reached the point where the extra little bit of burst that made Russell Westbrook so special in terms of his ability, not just to get past somebody into the lane, but to separate and get up above the trees to finish there? Yep. What if that's gone? And that's, I think, the concern if you're a Nuggets fan, saying we need him to be able to not just get into the paint, but finish there. And if that part of his game is gone, there might not be a whole lot left to bank on.
Yeah, he just blew a dunk in the last game where it was like, it seemed like an easy dunk for him. And then he just sent it through the rafters. And it's just like those moments where you're watching and you're like, man, this is getting kind of sad. And, you know, you referenced that wire quote. I'm going to reference the Clay Davis one when he's just like, you know, I'm like watching. Like, oh, this is not going well. And so when you look at Russell Westbrook, what does it look like? What does the end stage look like for him as an impactful NBA player? And I feel like this is it. This is what it looks like when a guy who is super athletic and has been able to get to the rim and finish at a high level and have that kind of intensity, this is what it looks like, is he just doesn't have that burst. And you do get blocked 4 times out of every 36 minutes. And that's second highest in the NBA. That's what it looks like. And so if he doesn't have that jumper to fall back onto, if he doesn't have spacers around him to basically open up the paint and get that daylight that he needs to finish at a league average rate, because right now, Russell Westbrook is shooting 35% on layups. Russell Westbrook, okay? So the jumper is very inconsistent. We know this. I just feel like what we're watching here, I don't know how they pull themselves out of it. And that's why I'm yelling timber. I think the Denver Nuggets are done as a superpower in the NBA. Last year, a big number I did was the curse of three. Every year of the last like 6 years, the NBA champion has in 3 years fallen out of the playoffs. And what we're seeing now is not just in the last 4 games. It's been in the preseason too, man. Like preseason, they didn't look good. And here in the regular season, it hasn't kind of turned itself around. They still have time. But look at the next, you know, month of games for this Denver Nuggets team. Like, they're going to be praying for the Toronto Raptors and the Brooklyn Nets in the next month. They've got games against Minnesota here coming up, OKC, Miami, Dallas, a back-to-back, you know, set with Memphis, Dallas again, Lakers, Knicks. This is going to be kind of the next month is the real test. Brooklyn and Toronto is not the real test. And yeah, maybe some of that high usage or high minutes of the starting lineup is because of the fact that they had two overtime games. But you don't want, if you talk to an NBA coach, you do not want back-to-back overtime games if you can avoid it. And if you're doing this in the opening week of the season, you're just already starting on empty. That line is flickering on empty. And I just got to believe that's going to not pay dividends going forward when you're talking about the legs of Russell Westbrook. So I do think this is a situation that I'm yelling timber. You know, we're going round and round here. Swing your partner round and round. Dan, I know you're bullish on the Denver Nuggets. Who are the 6 teams? So you got Denver on the list. I'm guessing OKC and Dallas. I've got Dallas, Minnesota, OKC, Golden State, Lakers, and Phoenix. That's my 6. Of that 6, you got to take one team out of there to be in the top 6, and you're putting Denver in there. So what team are you saying is not going to be in that top 6? Of playoffs.
I'm keeping an eye on the Warriors. I know you are confident in them. I know you and KOC were talking about them as sort of like both of you looking at it and seeing there's a case for something significant for them. This is maybe not the most scientific, but like at some point Draymond's going to miss a bunch of time, whether it's for an injury or for some other reason, visited on others. And D'Anthony Melton has already missed some time. I am not sure that the rest of that, you know, sort of the way they replaced Klay Thompson in the aggregate with a whole lot of other guys, I'm not convinced necessarily that that provides the backbone of a, you know, top 4 seed necessarily. So they've started out great, 4-1 so far. They, even with Steph missing a couple of games, I think there's a lot to like about them, but that would be the one I would look at. And if I'm looking at this from not a sprint, but a marathon, the Warriors are one that I might see taking a step back. The Lakers as well, you could sit, look at it and say they've gotten off to a much stronger start under J.J. Redick. They got probably the healthiest possible season they could have gotten last year from Anthony Davis and LeBron James. If either or both of those guys miss an extended stretch, they've been in the play-in for the last several years. Would not surprise me if they returned to that with one or both of those guys missing time. So maybe it's more of a tortoise in the hare kind of thing, where I'm betting that these teams that got out fast might come back to the pack, and the Nuggets with Jokic perpetually playing at his own pace might be able to walk them down. But you're right. They are digging themselves a hole. And it's weird to look at overtime wins in Toronto and Brooklyn as like, man, they really needed that. But 2-2 is a much sunnier vantage point than 0-4 with that schedule they've got coming up in a pretty unforgiving Western Conference. So that's where I would be looking for who's going to maybe take a little bit of a step back.
Glad you mentioned the Lakers here and Anthony Davis, because we're going to revisit our over-unders last week. We did a over-unders on the big number last week was about the stretch fives coming after the break. We're going to kind of check our notes here. We're going to look at our results here on the over-under so far. And also, we're going to do some new over-unders regarding this Denver Nuggets team right after the break. Cinco, cuatro, tres, dos, uno.
It gets me every time.
Dan, or Roddy, sorry, excuse me. Sorry about that, Roddy Piper. I want, you gotta, if you're listening right now and you forgot to listen to the first few minutes, we're in Halloween costumes. I'm Pitbull, Mr. 305, and we got Roddy Piper over here. Dan looks fantastic. Go watch the YouTube if you haven't, and subscribe to the big number wherever you listen to podcasts. Now,
sorry, before you go, I just want to make sure you, like, for verisimilitudes, so people know the commitment to the bit, I am wearing the kilt. You cannot see it. It is here under the table, but you've got to trust me on this. I wouldn't lie to you about something as important as wearing the kilt. It's breezy. It's kind of nice, but it does bunch a little bit. So maybe we can just kind of run through the rest of the show.
Oh, okay. I got you. I've got an open chest here. I shaved my chest for the first time in my life, and it is very itchy, and I'm ready to, like, get my hair, grow my hair back. I don't know how I'm going to make this science happen a little faster. Maybe some fertilizer from the garage. I don't know. But anyway, we've got some over-unders here to revisit from last week. Again, stretch fives, we were betting basically one way or the other whether Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, DeAndre Ayton, Derek Lively, and Isaiah Hartenstein, who hasn't played yet. We'll just put him aside for a second. But DeAndre Ayton, we had the over-under at 1.5 DeAndre Ayton, and I had said the under. He hit a three-pointer in Wednesday night's win over the Los Angeles Clippers, and you took the over you took the under on DeAndre Ayton. Excuse me, I didn't want to put words in your mouth or numbers in your mouth there for DeAndre Ayton. And now his per 36 minute three-point rate as it stands on Halloween is a 1.3. So it is just below the over-under line, which means we are both correct on that. Anthony Davis. We both looked at Anthony Davis in the beginning of the season and said, you know what? I don't see this the same way. You had the over, I had the under. The over-under line was at 3.7. And Anthony Davis right now, it's not 3.7, I'll tell you that. 30 per 36 minutes, he's at 1.6, shooting 25%. Dan, this is a lot lower for Anthony Davis than you expected.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of factors you got to consider, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous, you know, multiple small sample size theater to consider. Listen, I know it's not looking good. It's not looking good for me, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Raptors are not going to be able to stop him inside. The Pistons, they're probably not going to be able to stop him inside either.
Maybe he doesn't need to take threes. Maybe that's it, you know?
Yeah, I think what we're learning is that J.J. Redick's theory about how to fix Anthony Davis's jump shot is to tell him to roll his ass to the rim and dominate everybody. And it's good. It's going pretty well so far. I don't know. For me, AD, like a Halloween present for me. Instead of giving me candy, give me, you know, like 9 3-pointers. And then we can, you know, get the numbers back up so that I look good by the next time that Tom brings this back up to rub my face in it.
Yeah, we need him to be not Anthony Davis, Anthony Tolliver from downtown. Ooh, that is
let
a deep
it
cut.
Fly, so AT, sad. Let it fly.
All right, Bam Adebayo, we said over on 3.2 over underline. Yikes. Bam Adebayo is 0 for 8 from downtown in the regular season so far. He has not made a three. His per 36 rate is 2.3. We both took the over on Bam. It's now at 2.3, well below the over-under line of 3.2. Derek Lively, John Gennaro's boy, Derek Lively, has not taken a three yet. So the over-under line of 0.3, he is decidedly on the under. We both took the under on him. So all five of the bigs that we were expecting to maybe raise their three-point rate, all of them are under now at this point. It's early, but those preseason flings are nothing more than a preseason fling. So we got some new over-unders here on the Denver Nuggets. First one I'll throw at you is Denver's on-court offensive rating with Russ on the floor. I'm putting the line not at 87.5, which is today's big number. I'm putting it at 100. And that's points per 100 possessions, which we'll use from the NBA.com/stats definition. We're not taking out any garbage time here. We're just saying NBA.com definition of offensive rating, 100. I am going to take the under on 100. What say you, Dan?
I feel like what we're setting up here is I was optimistic twice on the shooters, and we are finding out that I was an idiot to be so optimistic. I should learn from that, right? I should be able to take this new information, onboard it, and make new, better choices moving forward. And yet, I'm going over. Russell Westbrook has played, I believe this is his 17th season. He has never had an on-court offensive rating below 100 in 16 years. He's going to spend at least part of his minutes on the court with Nikola Jokic. I think they're going to get over the high watermark of, or the low watermark, I guess, the low tide, the low ebb of 1 point per possession. I think he's going to be able to get over that.
Okay.
Maybe he just, it's like, you know, the dunks that are not really full on tomahawks. It's like, yeah, it's a grazer. It just kind of gets like over the lip of the rim a little bit. That might be, maybe it's 100.4. Maybe it's 100.9. Maybe it's another temperature that you'd have to call your kid out of school for. Whatever. I think the case is going to come that Russell Westbrook is going to get over that line. And it's still going to be a white knuckling it, gripping the, you know, like really concern over the course of the season for the Nuggets. But I think they're going to get over 1 point per possession. That's my optimistic take. He's going to start making more than like a third of his layups. I believe it. I really believe it. And I think that's going to send those numbers skyrocketing up to barely above 1 point per possession.
Maybe Zeke Nagy saves the day and comes in and becomes the next Joel Embiid.
I don't know. I think Zeke Nagy is locked in Michael Malone's Saw torture room, or you know, whatever. Insert your preferred horror movie murder basement. Michael Malone's had him in there for a while. I don't know that he's getting out.
Well, he's going to be needed because Nikola Jokic right now, his minutes per game, and of course we're dealing with two overtime games, so we have to include that in our analysis. But he's at 39 minutes per game, Jokic. I don't think after Serbia and the Paris Olympics, you're expecting Jokic to come in here and be like, yeah, I'm going to play close to 40 minutes a game. But that's where the way it is over the first month of week of the season. So I'm going to put the bar right here, the line, not at 39. I'm going to put it at 37. If Nagy wasn't in the doghouse, I'd be like, okay, they can buy some more time for Jokic. But the fact that the second unit has been such a dumpster fire and the kind of rift that we're seeing with the front office and the coaching staff, I kind of feel like Michael Malone is going to keep riding Jokic into the ground. I'm going to say over 37.0 minutes per game at the end of the season.
I can certainly understand why, given how reliant they've been on him to even look functional offensively. Like, there's no two ways about that. I'm going to go under, though, because you've got only, was it one, two, three, five guys last year averaged over 37 minutes a game. DeMar DeRozan, Tyrese Maxey, Luka Doncic, Miles Bridges, Kevin Durant, five. The number was two in 2022-23, Pascal Siakam,
it's
Kyrie
very rare.
Irving.
It's very rare. It's rare. Someone that high. Yeah.
And so I think you're going to look at it and see like there are fewer and fewer guys that play that number of minutes consistently. Jokic himself has never gotten over, I think it never played more than 35 minutes in a game, in a season, never averaged more than 35. 34.6 is his high watermark last season. I have a hard time imagining it's going to go like three or four up from that. So I think it'll be more this season. I think he will look for more. Like Malone will try to get every ounce that he can out of it. But I still imagine over the course of a full sample, maybe closer to like 36. I think so. We'll go there. I'll still go under. But you're right. They're going to need as much out of him as they can possibly get. The good news is he's able to provide a whole hell of a lot.
You're taking under by a Haberstroh chest hair that is no longer here. sorry for that visual. All right.
Don't ever apologize.
Jamal Murray,
for being
the
great.
Third one. We're going to hit Jamal Murray here. His effective field goal percentage at 50%. Some context here. Right now, he's at 43%. Preseason, he was 48%. In Paris for three games in the competition, Team Canada had an early out, 36%. And in the playoffs last year, he was at 45%. I'm putting the line at 50 because last year he was at 55% in the regular season, and his career, he is a 53% effective field goal percentage. For those listening at home, don't know what effective field goal percentage, that is just field goal percentage with weighted for three-pointers. So you get 0.5 points every field goal you make that is beyond the three-point arc, and the math is basically an adjusted rating that incorporates your three-point shooting. And Jamal Murray hasn't been very good in effective field goal percentage, has not been effective. And that's why I'm taking the under here. There's something weird with his body that he, and all the talk about conditioning and the Michael Malone, hey, in the NBA, you got to be well conditioned. Like, we got to play high minutes. Seems like nonstop just pew, 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 pew for Michael Malone. And I got to believe a lot of those little cheap shots or pot shots, whatever you want to call them, are aimed a little bit towards the Jamal Murray direction. And I feel like he knows something that we don't with regard to that. I'm trusting that Michael Malone knows what he's talking about here with the conditioning. And I know he's a slow starter, but I don't know. Based on what we've seen in the past 6 months, I'm not feeling great about the over on 50%. I am taking the under.
Again, I should probably just listen to the smart guy, but as a noted dummy, I'm going the other way. I'm saying over on this because to me, it feels a little bit, yes, the recent trend for Jamal Murray has been pointing down. Accepting that he would be sub 50% on effective field goal percentage means like he's cooked everywhere. He can't finish at the rim. He can't finish from floater range. He can't consistently knock down mid-range shots. And he's going to be below league average from three. I just don't think that's going to be true over a long sample. You've mentioned that Jamal Murray is a consistently slow starter who then ramps up as the year goes on and gets on these hot streaks. He is now, right now, through four games, 58% at the rim, 38% from short or mid-range, the floater range, and 32% on all mid-range shots, 28% on long mid-rangers. He's consistently above 40% every year on those, consistently above 40% every year on floater range shots, consistently above 60% on at-the-rim shots. So even if there is something that's a little bit wonky with his, you know, with his legs, with, you know, he had multiple issues last year that were like, it's not just one thing. Like, he had a lingering hamstring. It was several different things last season. Even if that is going to take some time for him to get right, I just don't imagine the shot's going to completely fall apart from everywhere. And 50 does not feel like a super high bar for him to clear. I might wind up looking very foolish, and the Nuggets might wind up looking like an also ran at this point, but I have established the bit that I'm in on them being in the top six, and that requires Jamal Murray being
good. You're parlaying this. Yeah.
So I've got to lean into it, right? If we've established that I think one thing is going to happen and a necessary condition for it is Jamal Murray being good, I've got to go over here.
Well, you're taking the over on Jamal Murray. You're taking the over on the 100 on-court rating for the Denver Nuggets with Russell Westbrook on the floor, and you're taking the under on Jokic's minutes. I'm going the opposite direction on all three of those. The early returns are that we're both whiffing badly on Bam Adebayo's three-point rate.
But and if you fold in all the threes he gave up to Karl-Anthony Towns last night, it would look great.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe we should do that math. Maybe we should add that in there. Anthony Davis, yeah, that's probably not going to help him on that department with that defense. So I think we're going to keep track of this all season long, not just week one, big number with the stretch fives. We're going to continue keeping track of these ones here, watching Russell Westbrook's on-court rating, if we can help it. And also, I'm going to, on the way out, I'm going to read, I'm not going to rap, I'm not Pitbull's kind of caliber of a lyricist or some of a rapper here. My tempo is not quite as strong as a one Pitbull from the 305. But I wanted the people to know we have a real, I don't know, Bob Dylan on our hands with the lyrics, the songwriting here. From the Timber spoof, the Timber Kesha spoof for the NBA playoff promo in 2014. Here are the lyrics for Pitbull's rap, okay, his verse. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. The bigger the heart, the harder they ball. Crossover, pull up, switch, get your J off. Alley-oop, slam dunk, playoffs. So I suggest you get your game up, playoffs. If you're ready for the playoffs, say yeah. We're about to clown. Why? Because it's about to go down. Playoffs, team by team, round by round, end of the night, it's going down. You already know, game winning shot, it's going down. Playoffs. That's right.
Isn't this Tom, beautiful? They don't write them like that anymore. Unless they do. I have not kept up on Pitbull's output in recent years, but I think they don't write them like that specifically anymore.
Please subscribe. Go check out the last episode last week. I might keep this look. I don't know about you, Dan, for the next week's episode.
I'm definitely not going to keep this look, but I like yours. Yours suits you very well.
Thank you for listening and watching. I apologize for all of this. But hey, stick around next week. We'll be back with the big number once again.
I hate you, Hulk Hogan.